I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Oregonians bought nearly 150,000 guns to start 2024, one of the highest rates in the U.S. With such a big number, it's reasonable to wonder why Oregon, of all states, is such a huge gun purchaser. Today on the show, which will be the first part of a two-part series, we'll talk with a local journalist who first wrote the story about surging gun sales, and then talk to a doctor at Oregon Health Authority who studies guns and health and provides some sobering information. Alan Torres, a local government reporter with our paper here in Eugene, the Register Guard. Thanks for coming in and talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Alan, you recently wrote a story where the headline was, Oregonians bought 146,000 guns to start 2024, one of the highest rates in the United States. What were your findings in doing your research and writing that story?
So this story was largely a localized wire story.
Okay.
That pulled from a recent survey of gun sales that found Oregon was the fourth highest per capita state for gun sales in the country.
Yeah. Anything stand out to you in terms of your reporting about that? You know, I guess why I'm asking that is because, you know, it seemed like the top 10 very rural states without a large city, which is different than us, obviously. I just didn't know if there were other things that you kind of saw in that story, saw in that wire copy, saw in that list that kind of made you go, that's kind of interesting.
Sure. I think, like you alluded to, it was a lot of rural states, but I mean, Oregon also has a lot of rural areas. The data didn't really go by county, which I would be interested in getting to see. And, of course, there's the people who are buying guns for hunting or ranching or versus people who want it for personal or home defense. And the data didn't necessarily go into why, but anecdotally it does seem – I talked to a local gun store owner who said that most of his customers were more interested in personal or home defense. And anecdotally, that does seem to be a factor as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm wondering, too, because I saw some of those quotes from the local gun store owner, and it is interesting because obviously here in Oregon, you know, we had this major law, Measure 114, which did have some certain limits on purchasing guns and also training and so on and so forth, which, of course, is held up in courts. But I imagine that, again, anecdotally, might be one of the reasons. Is that kind of what it would seem like to you?
Yeah, and the gun store owner I talked to did corroborate that he said sort of people were interested in buying guns before while Measure 114 was kind of pending because they didn't know in the future if they would still be able to make those purchases and following the court basically saying no on Measure 114, sales kind of fell after that because people have more time, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you know, we're still not that far away from, like, COVID. And I know that if I remember correctly, you know, kind of gun sales went up because of so much uncertainty and whatnot. I imagine that might be one of the reasons as well.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was Oregon in 2023, gun sales fell 4% versus like 3% nationally. When you look at the national trend, most states there's kind of been like a slight decline post pandemic.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Al, my last question for you is kind of putting this all together, and certainly in some of the talks you had. Imagine, you know, when it comes to guns, it might be that, you know, kind of, and maybe, you know, it kind of bears this out talking about COVID or Measure 114, there's a certain aspect of fear that might be related to gun sales going up or down. Is that kind of what you know, generally speaking, you could kind of at least a little bit see in some of your reporting?
I think that's a reasonable guess. I think that there was a pandemic spike that you could certainly say was driven by fear broadly. People, I guess, and we didn't really just see this with guns. Like, people were panic buying everything.
Sure,
in the pandemic.
Sure.
And I think sometimes people buy things to feel secure.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's very, very true. Well, Alan Torres, who is a local government reporter from the Register Guard, thanks for coming and talking to us about the story that you did. It is fascinating. It'll be fascinating to see how the trends continue going forward. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
We're going to take a break in our conversation about soaring gun sales in Oregon. When we come back, we'll talk to OHA about what the proliferation of firearms can mean to the health of our community. I'm Michael Dunn, and you're listening to Oregon on the Record. Back. I'm Michael Dunn, and you're listening to Oregon on the Record and our show about rising gun sales in Oregon. Now we're going to talk with an epidemiologist at the state to learn what guns mean for the public health of the state. Dr. Dagan Wright, a senior injury epidemiologist for Oregon Health Authority's Public Health Division's Injury and Violence Prevention Section, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
I just want to say thank you for the opportunity just to hopefully provide good information, helpful information. We're here to provide what we can.
Yeah. Why don't we start with this? You know, just sort of when it comes to guns, maybe talk a little bit about, you know, your area of study, your area of epidemiology around guns and the, you know, the importance of studying such a topic for OHA and the Division of Injury and Violence Prevention.
Sure. You know, firearm injury or injury from guns, you know, is important because it has profound impacts on the individual, the people that unfortunately incur the injury. It also has really important ramifications, not only just on the individual themselves, but say around their family members, their friends, and broader aspects of the community. So it's really important and imperative for us to better understand trends, demographics, what's happening in Oregon communities around firearm injury, so that we can better do upstream prevention for firearm injury in Oregon and keep this from happening to our population, to our Oregonians. So a lot of work I do is looking around counts and rates and better understanding trends over time with our health information systems regarding injuries that are occurring to our Oregon residents for firearm-related injury.
Okay. You mentioned the word trends. Talk about that. Talk about maybe some of the trends that you have seen with regard to Oregonians and firearms.
Yeah, we can maybe do kind of a short summary. So if we were just, say, comparing trends or rates, and when I say a rate, we always think, too, about, you know, how many of these person events occurred, you know, based off of a population, because sometimes you can see counts go up and that also is maybe there's more people available. But if we're looking around, say, base years or comparison years of 2018 and 2019, mm-hmm. Oregon has seen an increase in gun-related injury, both fatal and non-fatal. This does mirror similar trends at the national level. The national level, also looking at, say, 2018 to 2019, for the available data that we do have, Oregon's increasing trend is not that dissimilar from what we've also seen at a national level. We have seen an overall increase. We so far have seen a peak year for those firearm-related injuries in 2022. Hmm. But we have maybe, I'd always say a point is not a trend, but it's maybe a glimmer of hope is 2023, we actually have seen a decrease. It's still higher than, say, those years of 2018 and 2019. Hmm. But it does seem 2022 so far has been a peak year for firearm-related injury.
Okay.
In Oregon. And again, this is kind of interesting. It somewhat is also mirrored or impacted also with those national trends, where also the 2022 seemed to be a peak year, and then 2023 seems to be also at a national level a decrease. Again, one point in time, one measure does not, you know, yield a trend, but let's just say maybe it's a glimmer of hope for us with work around firearm injury prevention.
Okay. You know, when doing the work that you do, is there a, I don't know, a hierarchy of concern around this idea that, you know, is there a hierarchy of concern around accidents and firearms, violence and firearms, the prevalence of firearms? I guess what I'm asking is, you know, a gun, a firearm is inherently dangerous. But I'm wondering, too, are there sort of behavioral trends you see? We've certainly had, a measure that's been passed, but then has been sort of stayed by the courts that would require training and stuff for people to utilize firearms. I'm just wondering from your view, is there the human element around guns and stuff that feed into the trends that you've seen leading up to that peak year of 2022?
I mean, probably there's a lot going on, not just only from a human perspective, but from a societal perspective. But I think there's a lot of factors at play. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you mention this human component, Michael, is, you know, I'll probably reflect a couple times at it that these impacts have profound impacts on people, whether it's an unintentional injury from a firearm, whether somebody intended to hurt somebody from a firearm, or somebody tried to hurt themselves mm-hmm. from a firearm. And it's not just the individual impact. These have ripple effects that impact our family and community members. But there are, again, promising, I think it is a complicated, I would love to say there's some simple predictors on this, or there's some simple influences, but I think this is a very complex issue around there. Mm-hmm. But I can say that there are opportunities that we can work on managing risk for people. So if by managing firearm access. Mm. So if somebody is at imminent risk for either harming themselves or harming others, there are programs and there are prevention strategies out there to help manage firearm access that can help mitigate that risk. An example, I mean, there are, there's a Healing Hurt program that I think maybe you've heard of through Legacy Emanuel, and OHSU has also implemented it, where people, victims that have come in for a firearm injury, there are community member social workers that come in and meet them within hours of the injury. And they do some work to, again, think about how they can do upstream prevention to say maybe manage those ripple effects. Say if there was somebody trying to hurt somebody else, are there ways that this person, when they go in to work and manage that risk, that can maybe say mitigate reprisals? So there is work and efforts out there. I think there are a lot of factors that are going on regarding what we've seen, the increasing trends, and even now, say maybe a glimmer of hope of a slight dip or a decreasing incidence. But those community-led, community-based efforts, I think have a great opportunity to make an impact on firearm related injuries.
Okay. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Dr. Dagan Wright. He is a senior injury epidemiologist with OHA's Public Health Division's Injury and Violence Prevention Section. Speaking about trends, I wanted to ask too. You know, obviously, when a mass shooting occurs, it garners rightfully so, a lot of attention in the media. I wanted to ask you, do we sometimes maybe forget that one of the greatest impacts of firearms, negative impacts of firearms, is suicide? Do we maybe need to do a better job of understanding and drawing attention to that really great problem in our society?
Yes, it's suicide is an incredible, has huge ramifications, and the firearm is a mechanism for people that have died from a suicide is a really significant contributor. Oregon, the far majority of our firearm related injury deaths are due to suicide. So this does have significant impact. And again, I think there are many folks that are actually out there working with communities around suicide prevention. And there is open talk and open discussion around, again, kind of going back to that term, that we can manage firearm access for those that might be at higher risk around self-harm or suicide, that can really make an impact that might keep what might be at that time a quick decision from somebody, turn that particular event around, and that person does not die from a firearm related event, because a firearm is a very lethal means.
Sure.
And so, you know, I think that, again, that conversation around managing firearm access is an important conversation for those, again, that might have more imminent or higher risk, that really bad outcomes can happen for them or community members around.
Okay. Oregon is always an interesting state because we're a very urban state in the I-5 corridor. But we're also a very rural state. And I kind of wanted to ask again the buzzword about trends. Do you see some trends that show differences in injury from firearms in rural areas versus urban? Or is it kind of it's equivalent in sort of both sort of geographic regions of our state?
Yes, I mean, that's a good question, Michael. This kind of goes to a broader conversation too, not just say within urban and rural trends in our state, but even broadening out that regarding Oregon is a rural and frontier state. And we do see some of those different trends, say from Oregon compared to New York or more urbanized states. And again, when we look around the distribution, say for firearm related deaths, we definitely see a higher proportion of those firearm related deaths definitely due to suicide compared to homicide. So, you know, and regarding with our smaller, more rural communities, there are different distributions. But I think that there might be, even though differences within context, there are opportunities within both rural conversations that kind of are tailored around the context of those in a rural situation compared to those in an urban situation. For upstream, you know, again, firearm prevention, we definitely do see some different patterns there. And I think that thinking about those patterns, it's important to think about how do we tailor approaches for those prevention work and prevention strategies that really learns and meets the community where they're at.
Okay. You know, Dr. Wright, my last question for you is this. Talking about firearm injury and violence and suicide, it's a very sad topic, and sometimes it can be filled with pessimism. But I wanted to ask you, you know, what are sources of optimism that you see? You talked about the fact that, I know it's just it's one data point, but, you know, it seems like 2023 we saw less injury from firearms. You know, kind of what, to finish this out, what are some things you're optimistic about as we look at this difficult topic, and more importantly, as society comes to grips with it?
Yeah, I definitely prefer to be a person that sees the glass half full mm-hmm. and opportunities here. And, you know, I think we all have to acknowledge that there are different opinions around firearms. But you do see communities coming together. Say we have gun interests and advocacy groups that are at the table talking about suicide prevention and firearms. And you get people that I think that if there's an opportunity to where we have a common goal about saving lives, about preventing injury, and where partners feel that they're being heard and valued, you can get people to the table working together and still be okay with knowing that there might be some differences in opinion. And some, I think, you know, talking with some other states when I was at a national meeting with other epidemiologists, Oregon has a lot of people at the table working together that may not be seen as much in other jurisdictions. So I think there's really opportunity about where we want to all live and feel safer and reduce that incidence around firearm related injury. You get a lot of groups coming together and working for this and working towards this.
Okay. Okay. Well, Dr. Dagan Wright, he is a senior injury epidemiologist with OHA's Public Health Division's Injury and Violence Prevention Section. Thanks so much for joining us and talking about this very important topic.
I appreciate it, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow, we'll continue this conversation about guns in Oregon with two professors at Oregon State University. They study firearm marketing and sales and have some very interesting observations about how psychology and mythology are used to get more people of all stripes to buy more guns. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.